Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redmond. Today I'm interviewing artist Jodi Ohl. She lives in North Carolina, but she travels far and wide to teach her painting classes. Her style ranges from whimsical to abstract, and she has even published a book called Abstracts in Acrylic and Ink. She also teaches online classes, has instructional DVDs, and holds art retreats with her partner, Jean Skipper. Jodi left the corporate world to pursue her art and has pursued it with a business and left brain strategy. I think you'll enjoy this interview and hearing about how she works her business. This is Jodi Ohl. Hi, Jodi. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Suzanne. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so nice to meet you. I've owned your book for quite some time, and I've pored over it and tried to emulate what you do. And so it's really great to meet you in person on our Skype call right now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's so nice. Thank you for saying that. And I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
Yeah, thank you. One thing that I noticed on the book is that, you know, you're basically in the introduction trying to explain to people that you weren't trained as an artist and you've just worked through this and you figured out some techniques and you've done very well. So what were you trained as? What were you interested in when you were growing up?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I had a lot of different interests, but one thing that people might be surprised to know about me is that I actually was kind of contemplating being a musician, a professional musician. That was really my go-to art for since I was in elementary school. Started off with piano, then I played flute my whole entire middle school, high school career. And I also was really interested in writing. So writing and music was really my go-to art for most of my childhood. So then I went to college and I graduated with an English major and a minor in creative writing. But somewhere along the way, I kind of realized I wasn't disciplined enough to really be a full-time writer. And I had changed courses. I didn't, like I mentioned before, like I really was thinking about going in as a musician, but I was kind of like Forrest Gump. I ran and I ran and ran until I wasn't going to run anymore. I just was done with music and
oh, wow.
I moved on to, writing. And, it was one of those things that I decided that I wanted to write the great American novel, or I did journalism in school too. But then I had changed colleges midway through and they no longer had the same kind of writing program I was interested in. So I decided to take a lot of business courses, and my first part of my career was really all in business and management. And I kind of stuffed the creative side away for about 10, 15 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's really something. Well, I love that you have the musical background, because I just feel like the art disciplines really should mingle, and they do with you. That's nice. Do you still play music for fun?
No.
Not at all. You were dead.
I was done. Yeah. I know. We were talking about that last night about doing some kind of program for Christmas. So I'm like, well, I can bring out the flute. But no, I kind of, you know, I stuffed that part of me aside and I've moved on to other things. I can't really explain it.
Yeah.
But, you know, business was really my main focus as you know, like career wise. I was manager for a long time for, several different organizations and big companies and, you know, between retail and banking. But then my creative side kind of started coming back again. I've been a full-time artist for 7 years now, as of October, that is.
Ah, congratulations.
Yeah. But about 2005, 2006, I started really diving back into art. And it came at a time when I had a really big personal, a lot of things were going on in my personal life that really drew me to art again. I had a couple of very traumatic experiences, and I found art journaling, and I found, my blog was called Sweet Repeats, because I was like all into like, you know, yard sailing and refurbishing stuff that I found. And I really did it out of necessity. But, you know, back in the days when blogs were kind of really popular, I started finding art journaling blogs, flea market kind of blogs, all those kind of blogs that repurpose stuff. And I really loved the art journaling ones. And that's where I started kind of diving back into art. And I really filled a void that I needed to kind of cope with the things that were going on in my personal life. So that's a little bit of how I started getting back into my creative, you know, touching back into my creative side.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great. And the art journaling is just such a nice way to get into it, where, because there's no rules and you can learn some, but you can learn some techniques, and it can be personal. It can just be for you. You don't have to show anyone. So that's a kind of a nice, safe way to get back into art.
Right. And it was kind of fit where I always loved writing. And so it was, you know, like I did my creative stuff, and but it was also allowed me to kind of get my feelings out. So, you know, writing with the art journaling, so it was a great blending. So ever since I was a little girl, I had a ton of journals. And in fact, I was cleaning out, or I should say I was, myself and my friend Jan, who is my assistant, we were cleaning out my studio. We came across a bunch of old journals. She's like, you're not allowed to buy any more journals, but I really do have them since I was in the high school. And it was just, you know, something I collect along the way. But you know, the art journaling, going back to that, is really a great way to kind of meld those different loves that you have between, you know, painting and writing. And, you know, even for those that are scrapbookers, you know, there's a fine, like, it's very closely related to scrapbooking, which I never really did, but it's a great it's a great way to like go from one medium to the next and kind of keep developing your skills and moving on. And so I think that was like one of my first things. Then I loved doing collage. And then I came across a lot of different magazines like Cloth, Paper, Scissors and Somerset Studios that I just loved to read. And, you know, one day I was like, well, you know what? I think I could probably do something like this, because I had kind of moved into painting too at that same time. And I had made some friends locally that, you know, on top of my day job, I was really looking for friends that were creative as well. And my day job, I was the boss, so I really didn't have a ton of friends at work that I could interact with outside of work. I have friends in work, but I was looking for that sense of that bonding with other people. And so I found this one gallery that had a lot of different events on a monthly basis. And I started going there, and I'm like, well, like, I would just love to be in a gallery, and I would just love to do this too. So I started painting and, you know, doing different things. And, that's where it kind of led to me finding Cloth, Paper, Scissors. And, like, I think I could do this. I'm just going to take a chance and, you know, send some work in or send some ideas in. And, lo and behold, that kind of opened up the doors for a lot of great things to come.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I saw that on your website that you've were a guest columnist for Cloth, Paper, Scissors. Are you still?
I did a 1-year stint.
Okay.
I've worked with them since probably about 2009, 2010. And I've done freelancing with them for many, many years. And I also taught at their retreats, Create Retreats.
Oh, great.
And I've done a lot of DVDs with the same parent company. So a lot of different projects I've worked with them, and they asked me if I'd like to write a column called, you know, something about the creative life. They wanted to know, like my mission from them was to kind of talk about the joys, the triumphs, the obstacles, that a working artist faces. And so I did that for a year with them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me back up a little bit. At some point, did you quit your day job working in management and banking and retail?
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned before, I kind of really started going into art about 2006, okay. 2007. And, it always was like a little, I don't know, twinkling in my head that was something I really wanted to do, down the road. But I just felt like, oh, this is never going to happen. I mean, I had a really good job, and, you know, to lose that security, it was, you know, I was a single parent, and it was something that, you know, I really had to think about. But the business part of me said, like, well, if you really want to do this, you have to figure out a way to make this happen. So, you know, I started saving some money, and I,
great,
you know, just did, you know, I kind of applied everything I learned in business to kind of start my small business of being a creative entrepreneur. And so that, you know, started getting jobs, teaching. And in fact, I was trying to narrow down exactly when I started teaching, and funny how, you know, those Facebook stories start popping up. I had one pop up the other day. It was, I think it was August 25th, 2009 was my first actual teaching gig. So that
that's great.
Yeah. So almost for 9 years now. So that's, so with that said, like it took me about 5 or 6 years to save enough money to where I felt comfortable leaving my day job. And you know, I put a lot of stuff into place and, you know, what we used in the sales world call putting things into the pipeline that you have to, like I did shows and teaching gigs. And I tried to make sure I had enough work that would keep, you know, income rolling in, after I left my day job. But I didn't start off, I was working for, I was a bank for what was then Wachovia, which is now Wells Fargo. And, I left right when they finalized their transition into Wells Fargo. And I was kind of a tipping point where I had gotten a huge opportunity to teach at a big retreat. Mm-hmm. And so I had originally had 2 weeks off and they came back to me and told me that, they narrowed down when the dates were, when they're going to actually transition, and they could not give me the time off that I needed for teaching at that retreat.
Oh, wow. But you'd already committed, right?
I already committed. People were already signed up and I, you know, so I was like stuck between a rock and a hard place. Do I give up this opportunity or do I, you know, I just go ahead and take the plunge? And so I really thought about it for a couple of weeks and I, you know, like, all right, I think I can do this. I can. So I asked them if I could take a 6 month leave of absence, because this is an opportunity I didn't want to leave. But they basically said that I could do that. I could take 6 months off and go on a basically a sabbatical. And so I kind of felt like I had.
Yeah, that was really smart of you to give them an alternative instead of just saying, okay, I'm quitting. Right. That was very smart.
But here's the clincher.
Okay.
They told me the day before I left, they told me, HR called me and they said, all right, Jody, like for your time off, you need to, for the 6 month, you know, leave of absence, you need to do COBRA with us. And that was going to cost me $1,500, you know, which is basically like the interim medical coverage.
Right.
They kind of twisted my hand. You have to do that.
Yeah.
It was $1,500. And even as much as I knew I could make that money, I just didn't want to be strapped with a $1,500 medical bill that I had to pay for, you know, not knowing how my first year was really going to go.
Right.
So I just took, you know, I was probably stupid at doing this, but I just said, no, I can't do that. And I just basically left, like gave him my notice, like, this is going to be it. And
it was a practical decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I left that in good terms and I always knew that I can come back, maybe not in the same capacity.
Right.
But, you know, I really needed to, you know, I had spent so many years being a manager of many people that I really needed time to manage myself and do something for me. And so that was it. That was when that was back in October of 2011, I believe.
Okay. So the timing, it worked out, but you had done a lot of your homework of trying to save money and getting everything ready. So you weren't just jumping away from this job.
No.
What was the big retreat that you had committed to that you were teaching at?
It was Art as You, and it was in Danbury, Connecticut at the time.
Oh, okay. All right. Do they still do Art as You retreats?
They do.
Okay.
Sally Ann McClellan, I can't pronounce her name.
McClellan, yeah.
She's been doing it for quite a while, but she did take some time off last year to do some personal things, and she lives in Australia, and she has quite a robust life there. But they're starting it back up and they're doing a few different events, starting in October, I think, again.
Oh, great. Okay. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for your episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So was that the first time that you had taught, far away, somewhere other than near your home?
Yeah, far away. I've taught in Raleigh, which is about 1 hour and 15 minutes from my house. So
okay.
I don't know if you count that, but the first time I had to travel was, yeah, that was quite the experience learning. Because I've never been known to pack lately. So, and, you know, being a painter, and I had 3 or 4 different classes. So I really, and plus I was going to do an art, like they always have a vending show. So my truck was filled to capacity and I was like, oh my God, very overwhelmed. Like how in the world am I going to get all this stuff from North Carolina to Connecticut and drive there, which I'm not very confident driver, especially in the city. So it was really quite the adventure that I'll never forget.
Well, that's great. You probably brought a little bit more because you were driving and not flying there. So,
exactly.
You know, you just figured, well, it'll fit in the truck.
Exactly. Like the more the better, you know?
Yeah. And
I've since learned how to pare down, although I probably still bring a lot more than I need, but I love being able to provide the students with as much, you know, supplies that I can. Especially like, for example, if we're doing a project that you might need a little bit of modeling paste or, you know, whatever specialty medium, you know, I hate to have them the students spend like $15, $20 for just a tiny bit.
Right.
So I do try to bring as much supplies as I possibly can for the students to try out, try before you buy.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah. And that's really helpful for the students because for these big retreats, they come from all over the United States, some of them from out of the country too. Yeah. So how much teaching had you done before you did this big 2-week big retreat?
Well, the retreat itself wasn't 2 weeks, but I had taken 2 weeks off to do that.
I gotcha.
I had started, you know, working with Cloth Paper Scissors. So I had done several articles for that. And then I did a lot of local teaching. But this is my first out of town teaching. So I would say I was doing it for, 2009 was my first actual class and, that I taught, locally. And so for about 2 years, I kind of built up my, you know, chops teaching.
Yeah.
But this was definitely my biggest one.
Okay. Yeah. And you must have gotten a following because you were in a national publication being in Cloth, Paper, Scissors. So that helped you in getting students, I bet. Getting
that really
people
did.
To sign up. Yeah.
You know, it's definitely a challenge for those that are starting off. How do you get that national, you know, recognition of some sort? So working with publications that are in the genre of whatever you create in, there's just somebody out there. That's a good avenue. Of course, with the internet now and all the different social media outlets, there's a lot of different ways, approaches. There's no one right path for somebody, but that was a path that I took.
So when you first did articles for Cloth, Paper, Scissors, were you sending them a query letter?
Yeah.
Like, what is it that you sent them to propose, hey, I have an article I think would be great for your magazine? What did you do?
Well, basically, there's a couple different ways you can do that. You can follow their submission guidelines that they usually have a lot of times they'll have themes already pre-planned, and so you can look for their submission guidelines. I basically had different projects that I wanted to incorporate and I thought would make great articles. So I basically gave them query letters plus samples of the projects. I did it via email.
Okay.
But some places like you to send the work out with a query letter. But I think if you do the route that I took, which is via email, you know, really ensure that you have great pictures. And I think that was like key for me. Because, I mean, the greatest idea with this, a picture that doesn't show your work in the best light is not going to be attractive to the publications.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And then once I started working with them and, you know, basically, like if they had something they thought would fit something that I already did, they would like contact me for, you know, hey, would you like to write an article about this? Or we have an opportunity to do that. And so I think the more you do things, people start to recognize what you're capable of. And I think my blog was a big thing and a big part of that because I don't keep up on my blog as much anymore. I'm more on the social media end of the spectrum. But the blog was so instrumental on me getting so many jobs. I can't even really, you know, begin to tell you how many opportunities I got because of my blog.
Oh, that's great. I believe it.
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody followed everybody else's blogs. How you saw what other artists were doing. You could be in Florida and find out what people are doing in Seattle and Boston and all over the place by watching people's blogs.
Mm-hmm.
What is it right now? I'll jump to today. What is it right now that you think is the best thing that gives you recognition and exposure in the social media world?
Definitely, I would say Instagram is a big one. But I think, like, as your career progresses, you build up history. So, you know, I still have my blog. I still have my website. I still have all my social media outlets. I still have my old articles. I have DVDs. So it's like building up, like, a whole, you know, world of work that you've done that people can find you. And the more you do, the more more opportunity it is, or you create for people to find you. But I think right now, like, you know, take advantage of social media, because it is relatively free or low cost advertising to kind of get the word out.
Right.
So, and I still teach around the country too.
Yeah. We'll talk about that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, tell me about the other teaching that you do all around the country. And then we're going to go back to the teaching that you do in North Carolina, because I want to hear all about ReMe.
Okay.
But what about all over the country? You're teaching at small venues too. How are you finding some of these places where you're teaching?
Well, I was teaching for ArtisU for a long time. I think I worked with them for about 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
And then also Create, which was a big retreat. And then suddenly, like, things changed. Create decided not to do retreats anymore.
Okay.
And they kind of let all the teachers that had been teaching with them for some time know that they were discontinuing that program.
Okay.
And, ArtisU, I stopped teaching in, Connecticut, because I was doing something else in October. That was Connecticut was their October event.
Oh, okay.
Which is where ReMe came into play. I started doing ReMe in October. But so then I was kind of forced to look at other options.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a challenge. And, you know, I just kind of looked at where people were teaching at and peers of mine, and, you know, kind of made some contacts. But honestly, a lot of things either came from referrals from students, like, hey, we have a great shop here and there, or, you know, like, would you, you know, consider teaching with us? And then all of a sudden, like, different shop owners or boutiques would start asking. But a lot of times it comes from referrals from either other artists. Like, say, for example, like, I had a friend, Natalie Kalbach, or I have a friend, Natalie Kalbach, that teaches a lot in Oklahoma. So she mentioned to the shop owner, who is, you know, Mara Wagner, and said, like, hey, you know, my friend teaches. And so Mara's like, oh, like, the kind of, like, they developed, like, a connection
that
led to, like, reaching out to me. So I think it's about networking too. So it's not just, like, you know, doing all the research. I mean, once you build up a network and you ask, don't be afraid to ask for referrals from people, like, hey, I want to teach in Florida. Does anybody know a great venue that might be interesting? So then, you know, you do have to do some research, but, you know, the more you use your network, and, you know, don't be afraid to ask for the opportunity, whether it's from, you know, peers or students or shop owners. I think one of the greatest things I've learned from my sales background is every no leads to a yes. So if you don't get opportunities unless you ask for them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's in the episode that just went live today. That's one of the things she said is you just have to ask. You have to ask. Right. Right. So about how many times a year are you going away for your classes to teach?
I am doing, from January through October, usually once every 6 months or once every month. Sometimes it's more, a little bit more than I really want to do forever and ever. Amen. but right now it's working out good, and it's, you know, but right now it's, yeah, every once a month or once every 6 months or 6 weeks rather.
6 weeks. Okay. All right. Well, that's a lot then. Yeah.
It is.
Because you're going all over the place. So Oklahoma, where are some of the other places that you've taught or you have on the schedule right now?
Okay. So I've been Florida many times.
Where do you go in Florida?
Well, I was going to this one venue that actually is no longer open. That was called Artmore Place.
Oh, I've been there. That's a great place. Yeah. I was so disappointed when she got out of that business. Yeah.
Yes. It was a wonderful location.
Yeah.
I just got back from Paducah, Kentucky. I was in Mineral Point in June. I do our own, retreat in Ocracoke. Trying to think of where else I was this year. New Mexico. I was in Albuquerque earlier this year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you are all over. And then you're going to Way Art Yonder?
Yes, in San Diego in January.
That's great.
Just starting to build up my 2019-2020. So I have a potential for a couple international retreats coming up next year. So I'm excited about that. But I still haven't worked out all the kinks for that. So I haven't announced it publicly, but Italy and France are in my future, so that's really very exciting.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. Would that be your first overseas class you'd be teaching?
Overseas. I've done Montreal, so I have done some international work, but I'm looking to, now that my youngest son, Josh, he's just graduated from high school, you know, and so I really didn't want to go. Yeah. Well, he's still here. But again, it's like, I was a little bit hesitant to go to Australia or wherever and be away for 2 weeks because, we're kind of like on an island here in North Carolina. Most of my family's in New York and the other part of my family's in, Florida, and then his oldest brother is in South Carolina. So it's like, I don't have any family around here other than the friends I've made, which are, you know, my second family, but I'm a little bit hesitant to leave to go too far, especially out of the country with Josh still being in high school.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, if you're teaching 4 days in Australia, it's really an entire week or more with the travel and everything. But then you're probably not going to just do 4 days. You're going to make sure you teach 8 days since you're going all the way to Australia. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I've had opportunities to do other places, but I've kind of held back, and I feel like the time is coming very soon that I'll start teaching, you know, more things internationally.
That's great.
More venues internationally.
Well, that's exciting. That's a fun thing to look forward to and plan. Yeah.
It is. It is. Definitely. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for bringing all my stuff. Like, that's still like a, you know, I think like I have anxiety about like, how do we get all our stuff over there? And obviously I have to pare down, and I really have to, I love like the bringing so many things to choose from that you could just do whatever and have all these choices. But I think teaching overseas really gives you an exercise in limiting your palate and limiting your options so that, I mean, it's just not practical to bring everything in that you have in your studio.
Right.
When you're traveling like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to do a class where they're doing a 36x36 inch canvas.
Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you do things on paper too, or you just do smaller canvases when you're doing a class far away?
Well, I do a variety of things. So, in Paducah, I did do, 30x30 canvases with the students. We also worked on paper.
Okay.
And I either work with the shop owner and, you know, and ship directly to the shop.
That makes sense.
Or something like that. Yeah. But I do have classes called, I work on UPO paper a lot. So that's a big one. My next class coming up, I working in cold wax. So I do use Arches oil paper. So I do a variety. I don't limit myself on the size, but the venue itself could actually place different constraints on me. Like the venue may not have the size, the space available to work in a larger capacity.
I gotcha. Okay.
So that's my consideration. Like in San Diego, we're doing a similar class that we did in Paducah, but while she has a great space, it's still not big enough to really do 30x30. So we're going to pare it down, do a very similar class, but a smaller size.
I gotcha.
Up campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you want to talk about the classes that you do in North Carolina where you live? I want to understand what is REMI and what is Artworks VAS. Is VAS the name of the studio?
Okay. Yeah. So a little history there.
Yeah.
My friend Jean Skipper, and I don't know if you remember really in the beginning, we were talking about me trying to reach out to find friends, that were in the local area. Well, the shop that I used to go to a lot was her previous gallery. And it's called Artist Alley. So she was the owner of that shop, and we just became friends, and, we did a little bit of traveling together. I helped her with shows. And then she would help me for when I went to different retreats, be like my assistant for certain shows, and I would be hers. And then we just developed a friendship.
Oh, that's perfect.
And one thing we did notice at the big retreats, and it could be me and her feeling this, but we found that a lot of people do feel this way. Well, as wonderful as they are, there's still an element of kind of going from class to class to class and really not truly getting to know your students, and vice versa. The students get to know you. And developing that sisterhood, you do to some extent. I don't want to say that you don't, but we really were looking for a more slower pace, an intimate group setting. And so we started, we came up with this idea on one of our trips of doing a retreat, that was very personalized and we all inclusive. So that's where REMI came in. We were playing with different names, and it's an acronym for, remarkable, extraordinary, memorable experience.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
Yeah. So we launched that about 4 or 5 years ago, and we only do 2 or 3 different workshops, and they're all inclusive. Ocher Coke is our flagship retreat. So her and I have been business partners for quite some time, and we have a studio together, and right next door to our working studio is a gallery that it wasn't initially a gallery, but it was a space that opened up in a historic building in a town called Bass. And the opportunity arose where the space became available. And her and I were playing back and forth, like, should we do it? Should we not do it? And I was still in the mindset, like, the biggest part of my artistic life was not in a brick and mortar store. I travel, I teach, I do a lot of online classes, and I do have some galleries, but teaching is really the biggest part of my business. And Jean has come back. She came from a gallery ownership history. So she opened up last October Artworks Vast. So it basically took the name of the town, and then her name of her business is Artworks Vast. And it's basically a gallery that has, I would say, probably 40 or 50 different artists, mostly from around North Carolina.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's a great space, but she also has a teaching, a classroom in there too. So not quite as big as some venues I've been in, but it still can hold about 15 people.
That's a good size. Yeah,
absolutely. So I have my work in her gallery, and I also volunteer there. In fact, yesterday I was volunteering there. So a lot of the artists that actually work there or have their work there will volunteer for a day or two a month, and it's a great way to connect with your customers, to see what people are looking at, to, support each other. I think I found one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that, when you're an artist, it's really about building a community and building a network. And, I think we're stronger when we're together. And,
I agree.
A lot of my opportunities and ideas, not really, well, ideas, yeah, because as, and the brainstorming that I've done has been in the company of other artist friends where, we've had marketing groups together. We've had just, friendships, and you can we're able to bounce ideas off of each other. And, maybe somebody wants to do a show and doesn't have the experience. And like, if you have a circle of friends, like there's always going to be somebody that have the experience that you're looking for that you can kind of lean on as mentoring or as mentors, just somebody giving you advice.
That's and wonderful.
So Jean and I, so I don't, have any financial dealings with the gallery, yep. but her and I are business partners in Remy. So, and our working studio is right next to the gallery, so it's kind of convenient.
Oh, that's great. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So is the gallery set up like a co-op, or is it more the traditional gallery where she's choosing which artists get in, that type of thing?
We do have a jury. She kind of has a unique business model. It's not a co-op. Nobody pays to have wall space, which okay. I really don't feel is a good option for most artists.
Yeah.
But that's another story. But it's a traditional gallery in that sense. But she also has space in the gallery she has 3 working artists that actually have their studios there.
Ah, okay.
And then her and I have our working studios next door. But yeah, you don't have, like, you just pay the commission is typical 60-40. Some places are 50-50, but hers is 60-40.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and you can volunteer there to reduce your commission rate if you want. That's yeah. the way she works.
I gotcha. Okay, that's great. So does she rotate and change out the art and have receptions every once in a while?
Yeah, once a month she does a theme. We have a pretty nice artist community in our area, and downtown Southern Pines, which is about 15 minutes from our gallery, they do a First Friday event mostly during the summertime. So that's kind of like a night where people do art walks, or there's music and whatnot. So that night is kind of taken, and then there's a couple other events throughout the month. So she chose to do Final Fridays for her monthly opening. So usually there's an opening. And she usually does more than one artist at a time and have a theme around it. So like this month it's pottery. So we're featuring a lot of pottery artists from around North Carolina. Next month is, because it's her anniversary, she's featuring the art of the resident artists. So myself and Amy Smith, Rick Martinez, Kathy Miller, and Jean will all be featured on the ones that have their art studios at the gallery.
Oh, okay.
Or nearby.
Alrighty. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you have that space there. You said it can hold about 15 people when you do a class. Is that where you do the classes for the Remy retreat?
For the one in the Sandhills, we do. And the Sandhills is a nickname for this part of North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
We actually have a house that we rent where the students have an option of staying with us or they can stay off site. And then the classes are held at this gallery. And then we also do events around the area, kind of a team building, group building events. So we try to do something different every year. And in Ocracoke, we run a historic inn and we do the classes right on site at the inn.
Oh, and that's where the people stay as well then.
Yeah, stay and work. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different.
How far away is Ocracoke from Vass?
6 hours.
Oh, okay. So you've just chosen two different sites just to offer two different choices for people to do your retreats then.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
And so your retreats, I was looking on your website, it's not just you teaching, you're bringing in other artists, instructors as well, right?
For Remy, it's just Jean and I.
Okay.
Teaching. All right. Yes.
Okay.
The two of us.
Okay.
But not to say that won't change in the future. You know, we've toyed around. Like, we're both realistic about things. There may be times when I may get an opportunity in May. We try to have it around the same week every year. So we're realistic about things that, like, either one of us may have to back out of a retreat for one reason or another. So it's not to say that we'll never invite other people to teach.
I gotcha.
But right now, we're just doing it, her and I.
Okay. Alrighty. And these can be found on your website. And is there a separate website for Remy?
Yes, it's remyretreats.com.
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes too. Okay.
Yeah.
And have you already planned all of them for 2019?
We have 2019. We don't have the October one up.
That's right. You said, yeah.
Yeah, the May one is technically sold out right now.
Like,
it's pretty much it's perpetually sold out. We may have one or two spaces open up, but a lot of times the alumni will snag their seats. So, and then we have a waiting list. So right now, even though I say it's sold out, we still have a couple open spaces, but the first option to take those spaces go to our alumni.
Oh, wow.
And
that's great.
If nobody, the people that are on the waiting list, if they can't do it this year, then we will publicize it. But the October one, we still have some spaces for this October. And then next October, we haven't even announced yet. But that's the way we typically work it. The people who actually go to the retreat, since it is a small, intimate one, will have the first pick. And then we go to the alumni and the waiting list that we have from either our newsletter subscribers or people who have previously requested a space.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good to know how that works.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing that we have not talked about yet, and I don't want to miss this, is tell me about your book, which I own, but what is the title of your book?
My book is called Abstracts in Acrylic and Ink, and it's a playful painting workshop. And basically, it is about abstract painting, but I also wanted to do a lot of short exercises that really showed students how to build up the foundations to all of their paintings. There's a lot of usage of gel mediums and different textures. I wanted to work on a lot of different substrates too, just to kind of open up everybody's mind on, it's not just canvas, it's not just wood. We use clay board, UPO paper, gesso board, canvas. There's a variety of different techniques, a lot of get out of your head and get started painting exercises. I started with that, but I try to combine shorter exercises and give a wealth of information. There's over 22 different exercises in there. So it's not, there are a lot of paint, from start to finish exercises in there. There's also a lot of ideas that you can take and continue to run with it. It's a great book for people who, you know, are interested in mixed media, interested in abstract painting, and afraid or don't know where to get started. So it's a great beginner's book. And hopefully I keep writing additional books to keep, you know, building on that first foundation that I started with, like this book that I think it was released in the end of 2016. So it's about time for me to start writing a new one.
Oh, there you go. That's great. How did you make this book? Had somebody approached you because you'd been teaching so much, or did you approach a publisher?
Well, interesting. I was interested in writing a book. So the person, one of the people that I was most familiar with were the people who work with Cloth, Paper, Scissors, F&W Media, Northlight. So I reached out to the then mixed media acquisition editor, which is Tanya Denny. And I asked her, what's the procedures to, start, how do you do a proposal? So she gave me a lot of information. And then I looked at it. I'm like, oh my goodness, there's no way I could do this. Like, I had a full teaching schedule. I'm like, there's just no way. I'm like, this is a huge commitment. And I just don't think I have the time to do it. So I kind of tabled that for over a year. Like so I knew what was, would be asked of you, of me or any author potentially to get started. And it was a huge commitment. And so I just like, I'm going to be ready for it, but I'm not ready now. And then I started, doing different things, posting a lot on Facebook. And I've always loved abstracts, but in different ways. Like I love abstract creating on collages. I loved it on art journaling. And then I started getting really into abstract painting on canvas and larger works. And I started posting those on Facebook. And here's a lesson for everybody to, kind of really take to heart is you never know who's watching you, good and bad.
Yeah.
but at the time, the editors for Cloth Paper, I keep saying Cloth Paper, the editors for Northlight, F&W Media were basically scouting out talent. And they dropped me a line and said, hey, are you still interested in writing a book for us? And I'm like, yeah, very interested in. So my first inclination was that they wanted something whimsical because that's really where a lot of my roots had begun with painting whimsical paintings, the houses, the creatures.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that that's what they were interested in. Well, no, they were interested in the abstracts I was posting on Facebook. And they said that we think it's great. We think you have a great way of connecting with the everyday reader, the mixed media artist. It's a great way to segue from your whimsical work into abstracts. And we're really interested in what you're doing. And so I'm like, you know what? I wasn't ready about a year or two ago, but I'm just going to dive in and give it a shot. Excuse me. And so the rest is history. So I kind of embarked on that journey at the beginning of September 2015. It took well over a year to kind of get all the work in place. But yeah, that's how it started.
Oh, wow. That's an amazing story. But it was because you were putting it out there too by first contacting Tanya Denny and then also putting it all out on your Facebook and probably more so on Instagram now.
Yes, exactly. So
yeah.
So that was the thing. And I think I've learned a few things. Like having that experience, if I could give one word of advice is for those who are wanting to do a book, is you don't have to have everything 30 by 30 or huge paintings. Like I about killed myself creating work for that book because I thought like you had to have all big paintings and like really they could take 11 by 14 and make it look gigantic in book form. So
that's
so
right.
It was really kind of a funny story. Like, when I, you have to go to, well, you don't have to, but like I actually went to their studio to get a lot of my work, photographed professionally. And they wanted you to bring all like the work that they had, contracted you to do, like it's for outtakes and pictures and whatnot. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to get all these paintings here? Like they're huge.
that's when you realize, oh no, they should not have been so big.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can't turn back now. I have to be there in a week. And I'm like, so I was panicking and I'm like, what in the world am I going to do? This is going to cost me so much money to ship everything. And I just like, all right, I'm going to rent a U-Haul truck and I'm going to bring all my stuff. Cause I still had to bring all my step outs too. So like for every exercise that I did, I had to have backups. Like, so you figure 22
like
projects.
In process. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my.
So I had a load. And so I was contacting my editor. I'm like, do you guys have somebody that can help me back up my U-Haul? I'm like, what? You brought a U-Haul? they're like, so it was just kind of a funny thing. Like they, like after doing several projects with them, they know that I don't travel light, but like the book incident was probably took the cake on me overdoing it.
Oh, that's great.
I'm bringing a U-Haul to do my photo shoots.
That's full so of artwork. Funny. And you drove this, you started in North Carolina. Where did you have to go for this?
Just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. So it was about a 10-hour drive. I was perfectly fine as long as I didn't have to back up.
Oh, that's great. Oh, they must have laughed when they saw that U-Haul.
Yes. And like, it's like, no, it was, I think, I'm trying to remember what day it was. It was some kind of a Monday or two. It was a day that everybody had the day off.
Yeah.
And so the only person that could help you unload was the manager at the time in the studio.
Oh, gosh.
I'm like, Rick, did everybody bail on you to help me unpack this trailer? Because you knew they knew me. You know, I knew I was coming. And he's like, yeah, something like that.
Oh, man. I'm gonna have to call you next year and say, how did it go in Italy and France and you getting all your things across the ocean for classes?
So now you can see where my anxiety comes from.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a history. There's a connection between all my different events. And yeah.
Well, that's funny. I also remember one thing that was in your introduction for your book is you talked about art supplies, and you said there's a fine line between having supplies and then actually being a hoarder.
Yes. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. You know, you definitely, like, I have, so, you probably can't see because I don't have a position, but I have like a three whole walls of floor to ceiling bookshelves, and every single one of them, every single shelf is jam packed full of supplies and then some. And we've actually cleaned out the studio. And then I have a studio uptown with Jean. So I have more than my fair share of supplies.
Oh, so you have a fully stocked studio at your home as well then.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I kind of work here more than I do up at the other studio. It's just easier to roll out of bed and start working.
Right.
Yes. I actually got dressed for you today. So this is a very special occasion.
Thank you so much. I put on makeup for you, even though I don't save the video.
That's wonderful.
Oh,
us artists are strange lots.
Well, you know, it's funny when you were talking about making connections, and you were talking about connecting with a local art retail shop and meeting other people, you know, those connections are so different than the connections that you make on the internet. Mm-hmm. The internet connections are great. I mean, I have people I call my friends for years, but I've never met them. Yeah. I've never met them. And, but there, you just need those in-person ones as well. You know, you need, and I'm sure that's what's great about having your studio and having art, artwork. See, I knew I'd mess up the name. Artworks Vast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, people are coming in and you're talking to people face to face about your art. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I really truly believe we are so fortunate to live in the times that we're living in right now, because not only can we have the face-to-face and that personal interaction, we can develop relationships, networking, and, you know, between ourselves and students, customers, friends, peers, and really just kind of our world is so open now, and we have so many opportunities as artists, or really any type of business now because of the internet. But I do feel that having that in-person connection is so vital as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm going to look at my list here and see if there's anything else. I don't want to miss anything because you've done so many wonderful things. one of the other things that I saw on your website, and by the way, you have a great website. I really want to compliment you on that, because what you mentioned earlier about you have a history of your blog and you have a history of photographs of your art journal pages or different things that you've done. The website is a nice landing page where you can see all these things in one place. So even though you can make the statement that Instagram is probably the social media account that gets more noticed by people right now, it's still great to have that website, because that's where I saw all your retreats, your online classes, we didn't talk about online classes, but all of your live classes and your book and everything. But one thing I did want to ask you about is you mentioned that you've also been featured in 7 other mixed media books.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of your, again, because of your cloth, paper, scissors relationship? Or is it because of your North Light relationship from your book?
Some of them are from friends of mine that I've been asked to do work for.
Okay.
Or people I've connected with through the industry. I would say about 4 or 5 of those are that. A few of them are from North Light that, you know, I've either entered publication call for submissions, like some of my Insight books that I've been featured in.
Oh, okay.
With those.
Okay.
And then some were like, hey, like one big one that I was, oh gosh, I don't think I have it right here, but, there's a big book. I think it's called Abstract Journeys. I might be mistaken it, but it has like a peachy color on, cover on it. But, my editor asked me if I would like to submit some abstracts for that. So I did do that, and it had a nice, like, you can write a, like, they had a lot of questions you can answer.
Oh, so a little, a little bio?
Yeah, and questions about your process, about your inspiration and whatnot.
Oh, okay.
So I sent in a few things, but when I got the actual publication, 2 of my paintings were on the front cover jacket of it.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, in addition to that interview, so that was, like, so thrilling. I'm like, oh, my goodness. It was such a proud moment.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So, yeah, it's a mix of everything.
Yeah.
That, you know, both the connections, submitting artwork for calls to for art, and, a little bit of everything.
Oh, that's great. Okay. All right. Well, let me go back and let's talk about your online classes real quick, because – You mentioned that you do have the DVDs and other things that you've done through cloth, paper, scissors, but I know you've got, is it an online class that you're launching September 17th?
Yeah, that's my newest big one. I usually do 1 or 2 bigger classes each year.
Okay.
And that's my big one for the year. It's called Abstracts and Cold Wax and Oil Painting. But I'm trying to remember exactly. I think I have about 15 or 16 of my own classes. 10 or 12 of them are, on creative workshops.
I saw that. So creativeworkshops.com is a place that has many artists' online classes together, right?
It's actually .me.
Oh,
so
dot
I think
M-E.
The .com okay. That was already taken, but creativeworkshops.me, or people can find that are interested. I have the active ones on my Etsy shop. So that's
okay.
Something that they can just look at through my website and the links to everything. But yeah, I've been working with Gail Schmidt of Creative Workshops since 2009. And so that I actually started doing online classes before I did in-person classes.
Oh, wow.
Would you believe?
That's kind of a different way of doing it. Yeah. Okay.
That and combination of doing articles for magazines. Mm-hmm. And I've done a few for Somerset Studios too. Like I kind of I did things in conjunction. So like the online classes along with the in-person classes, they kind of feed off of each other.
Okay.
And a lot of times I would do in-person classes first. And then I work with students and, you know, and to see what they're, any hurdles that they're facing about this particular technique, or what are the questions that they're asking, and what do I really need to incorporate to these classes? Like every class, even if I'm teaching the same class, you know, somewhere else, I try to keep improving it. So what I tend to do is I'll teach a class in person and then I'll work on the online version of it.
Oh, great. So okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, but one of the things I noticed on your website is you had a specific category called online group workshops.
Yes.
How is that different?
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I almost forgot about those.
Yeah.
So that's basically a collaborative, there's several artists that basically are the managers of these websites that basically do group. It's almost like an online retreat where they feature classes from 20 or more artists. And usually I would say they're a year-long program, and each artist is featured between that and the host on different occasions. Like, for example, I did Tamara Laporte's life book the very first year that she started doing that. I've done 21 Secrets. This year I did Wanderlust. I work with Natalie Kalbach for Creative Jumpstarts for the last several years. So basically there's different art incarnations, but it's a great way to you know, get involved with like artists that you are familiar or you're that are along the same lines of what you do, But you also open yourself up to a lot of new students and customers and people that are maybe interested in your art, because all 20 or 25 artists that are working in collaborations with these group projects, they all have their own following too. So the, you know, I've gotten a lot of, you know, kind of keep on building your connections, like with doing things like that. So I don't think I'm doing any in this coming year, 2019, but I've almost every year for the last several years, I've done some sort of collaborative project.
Okay. Yeah. I have heard of those. I've gotten the 21 Secrets one time, and I think I talked to another artist who was going to be on Wanderlust. So, briefly explain how it works. It's advertised on a website, and then is it a certain date you have to purchase all of these classes by a certain date, and then they go live on a certain date? Am I remembering it correctly?
Yeah, I think everybody works a little bit differently, okay. But basically you have a pre-sale period where generally the workshops are online, and everybody that's involved with the project will do advertising and kind of little sneak peeks about what their project's going to be. Or, you know, the head of the group project may say, like, this is what we're going to be doing, maybe a blog hop or whatever the case may be. And then it'll go live on a certain date.
Okay.
Now, each group has different ways of releasing the projects. I would say the most common one is to release it throughout the year or through X amount of dates. Like, for example, Natalie Kalbach with her Creative Jumpstarts released a new video every day for the whole month of January. That's how she does, opens up the year. So there's something new from each artist every day. Other groups like Wanderlust, they have a theme throughout the year, so different artists fit into different categories of that theme. So you could basically, like, as a student, you would take the class and you would work within a theme, and then the different artists that are working, having the lessons will go live during that period of time. Some of them are downloadable. Some of them are live for X amount of time.
You know, gotcha.
So maybe like for 18 months, you're able to work in those classes. So it's a little bit different. It depends on like you have to read the fine print.
Right. Okay. Well, good. That's a good explanation of it. And I think that a lot of them have Facebook pages connected to it. So there's some kind of a community where anyone who's participated can post the artwork that they've made based on the class. Right.
Right. And they're very reasonable. So for example, usually they run about anywhere from $100, $125,
mm-hmm.
but you're getting so many lessons. Now, the difference, and so if you're interested in working with a teacher, you get a little snippet of what their teaching style is like, but it also kind of gives you, you know, as a student, you're exposed to a lot of different techniques for a relatively, you know, you wouldn't be able to take 25 classes from teachers for $125.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
So it's very... But the difference between the collaborative classes and, say, for example, like my upcoming class, it really is like being in a one-on-one workshop with me. So it's like you get a much deeper dive on a project. You know, you get to, you know, really not just a project, like I'm really focusing on an overview of this technique of working in cold wax. So the students are going to learn a lot of different ways to apply the cold wax, why they do it this way, why they don't do it this way. And plus work on projects. There will be like, you know, up to 10 paintings that we'll be working on. So you get a really deep dive rather than just doing a short 40-minute lesson. Well, they'll have like 5 or 6 hours of content, you know, just on a particular subject.
Oh, that's great. How long, what is the time period of this class, this online class that you're starting? Is it like 4 weeks or?
Well, the way I do it is a lot of times I'll release the class with all the videos up front.
Oh, okay.
So it's self-paced. I always find that the class is really busiest the first 6 to 8 weeks when the class goes live. But I have some classes that are still available that are, you know, 8 or 9 years old. So I don't usually take down. I know some teachers do take down the class. I don't. I mean, there are classes I've retired, but I've given students plenty of time. But, like, for example, I've retired a couple art journaling classes of mine just because, like, if somebody saw my art journaling today and they saw an art journaling class that I had released in 2010, it is so vastly different than what I'm doing today that I wouldn't want somebody to be disappointed, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, But as long as, like, I feel like, you know, it's not something that I, you know, I think people still gain some, you know, tidbits of information from, I'm going to keep them up. And, you know, that's the way I feel. But I don't really subscribe to the part. Like, a lot of people do things for different reasons. And it could be like just the, you know, when you have classes live, if I have 10 classes going, I technically could have students asking me questions from all different 10 classes. And that's a lot of energy you're exerting to keep these classes up. And not everybody wants to do that.
I gotcha.
I find that that really isn't a huge issue, because usually the newest class is where the most activity is. And every once in a while you get some questions from an older class that pop up. But generally, like, those older classes become self-studies for the most part after a while.
Okay. Yeah. And is it is it your Etsy shop? Is that the best place to find your classes, the online classes?
For right now, like, they're cross-posted both at Creative Workshops and in my Etsy class, or Etsy shop rather.
Oh, okay.
But I think if everybody goes to my website, which is really easy, jodiol.com, there's links to everything right there.
Okay, that's great. So you've got a lot on your plate all the time, and you've got a lot of great plans coming up. Maybe we'll see another book out of you, and maybe you'll be traveling to Europe next year. That's wonderful.
Fingers crossed. I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, like, life is too short. Like, I feel like you have to keep pushing yourself and, you know, and keep really honing your skills. I feel like I'm a lifelong learner, and I've really been blessed to be able to share my joy of teaching and learning with my students. And I kind of take my students along the same journey that I'm on.
That's
great.
And
I hope to do that for a lifetime.
Very nice. Well, it's been lovely talking with you, Jody. You just have such you have such an interesting life with all your teaching, and I am just a huge admirer of your art. So it's been fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you
so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of yours since I found your podcast. So thank you for doing what you're doing. And really, I think it's so important for artists to not just be creative, but to really understand, like, the business side of art, because, you know, we should definitely treat our art business as a business. And I think the stronger that we can be on the stronger we can be on that left brain side of ourselves, the more successful we can be as an artist and continue to doing what we were doing for a long time.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's so true. But thank you for that. Yeah. And coming from you, someone who's got the business background, that means a lot to me. So thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you
for having me.
What a great interview. I'm truly inspired by Jody's art and her business. Although it doesn't sound like there's enough hours in the day for everything that she does. Be sure and check out my show notes for her episode on my website at suzanneredmond.com. I've got links to her website, her book, her online classes, her instructional DVDs, and her Read Me workshops. Here are some great takeaways from this episode. Number one. Use what you know in business to start as a creative entrepreneur. Number two, consider submitting articles to publications that are in your genre. If you are emailing your submission, be sure you have great photos of your artwork. Number three, don't discount the years of posts you made on your blog. It's still your history, and you can use that as the source for class material or magazine articles. Number four, work your favorite social media site like Instagram or Facebook. It's a great way to get noticed within the art world. Number five, to find teaching venues, look at where your peers are teaching. Number six, when creating artwork for a book, you don't necessarily need to create large pieces. Number seven, don't be afraid to ask for referrals for teaching. Number eight, keep pushing yourself and honing your skills in art and business. And number nine, the stronger we can be on our left side, the more successful we can be as artists. And I hope that everyone can take that to heart, because it's so true. I hope Jody has inspired you to try your hand at teaching a class or writing an article for a magazine or painting some abstracts. For those of you who have listened to a few of my podcast episodes, I'm sure you're understanding now that no two artists have the same careers, nor do they take the same path. So go ahead and teach in person first and online second, or do like Jody and teach online first. Keep cultivating your relationships online, but don't forget about the ones in person too. As always, I post a lot of photos of the artist's artwork and business in my show notes for the episode. So check out Jody's art both on my website and on hers. If you are enjoying these podcasts, be sure to go on iTunes and leave me a review. And thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I'm Suzanne Redman. See you next time.